I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It must be football season in Texas. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Every Friday night, get an insider's look at college football with a Texas twist. From big matchups and exclusive interviews to expert analysis and accurate odds. Everything a Texas football fan needs. Game Day with Jeff Ward right now on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Powered by Uber Eats.
This is Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward, and wherever you are in Texas, thanks for listening. This is a show about the storylines of the games, the players, and coaches of the programs you care about and the best football state in the country. All right, so here's what's ahead. I'll give you my Game Day Power Index 1 through 5, and it was a ridiculously good week for the Texas teams. In fact, it might be the best week Texas programs have had in a long, long time. I think I called it Separation Saturday, and it went that way. SMU, Texas Tech, and A&M put themselves in great positions. We have to talk about Texas and Oklahoma, what that means for both short and long term. I'll break down the teams, the coaches, and players most under pressure. Hint, a lot of Oklahoma-Texas there. And we'll finish up with some predictions.
Now, the Game Day Power Index, powered by Kia of Fresco.
All right, this week's top five. Not much changed because all five won. The best question might be, who's hottest? That's a challenge by itself. You could argue the Aggies. They had a 41-point showing at home. You can make a really good case for Texas Tech. They had a huge road win. And then you could argue that SMU's the hottest team after three wins in a row and a huge win on the road against Louisville. So let's do the top five. At five, Texas State at 3-2 stays number five. They blew out Troy. No surprise there. They belong at five. Then it gets kind of tough. Number four, I still keep Texas Tech. They're tied at the top of the Big 12 after a huge road win at Arizona. They win by a touchdown. The schedule for them, and it's all in front of them now, the entire league and making up that ground or holding ground for them because they're at the top. What's ahead for them is Oklahoma State, Iowa State, TCU, and Colorado. It's not easy, but everything is in front of them. They're very much in the chase for the Big 12. At number three, a team that nobody wants to play right now, that's SMU. They cracked the top 25. They beat 22nd-ranked Louisville by a touchdown on the road for the biggest win that program has had in a long time. Some might even say going back to pre-death penalty days for SMU. That's how good things are right now. It's been a long time since the conversation has been about SMU, but it's legit. They are only loss, and now you can start to put this in perspective for SMU. Their only loss is losing to a really, really good undefeated BYU team. They are now chasing a conference championship. They're 3 points from being undefeated. At two is a very deserving A&M team. The Aggies, I think, had their biggest win that program has had in years. It may even stretch back to a Johnny Manziel upset of Alabama. I said last week, they've got to have some positive momentum. They've got to have some good vibes. Things have to start to go their way offensively. They have to find a quarterback. They did it all. They did it perfectly. It could not have gone any better for A&M. They get a blowout win over Missouri. It was a 41-10 beatdown at Kyle Field. They're now number 15 in the country, but they seem to have found their quarterback, at least for now. Connor Wigman was rock solid. He went 18 of 22 for 276 in a win over Missouri. It's all good for A&M now. Now, the question, of course, is, you know, what can they do with this? This sounds like I'm getting over my skis, but I'll start the conversation. A&M is very much in the 12-team playoff conversation. They really are. In fact, you start looking at stories around the country, you're going to see A&M consistently listed as the top bubble team. And that's pretty cool. Now, can they handle that pressure? We're going to find out. There's a lot to like about them. They play really, really good defense, good enough defense to keep in every game. The challenge, of course, is Connor Wiegmann, if he can stay healthy and if he can stay consistent. It's hard not to look ahead, but if the two stay hot, let's do it. Let's start talking about it now. That end-of-the-year A&M-Texas game is cool on a number of levels, if they can both take care of business. At number one, without playing, of course, because chaos reigned supreme last week, number one is now Texas again. They're number one again because, well, who knows what Alabama was doing. They had the most ridiculous loss in college football in years. They were a 23-point favorite over Vanderbilt and lost. Thus, the students at Vanderbilt took the goalpost and threw them in a river. Yeah, who blames them? So Texas is back at number one with a game at the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma. Okay, a bunch of storylines to this one. One, of course, is Quinn Ewers. He is back as the starter. Steve Sarkisian went there, named him starter. Texas is a 14-point favorite over 18-ranked Oklahoma. That's got to be the biggest line in decades. I can't remember a line that big. So these are historic numbers. This will be the 120th game. Texas leads the series 63-51. There are five ties. Oklahoma, though, has won eight of the last 10, including last year when Texas was the favorite and they melted down in the last minute and a half. So I think you could say Oklahoma, to a degree, is playing with some house money. A lot of variables. Texas coach Steve Sarkisian said this about the game this week.
Anytime you have a rivalry game like this, Red River rivalry, in my opinion, you know, as you guys know how I feel about this game, it's one that's very special and one that we're humbled and honored to be part of the history of this game. And to think this is the 120th time Texas and OU have played is pretty fascinating. And to be part of it, like I said, is special. Our preparation is really critical this week as we get ready to play a very talented football team. Coach Venable's done a really nice job. They play excellent defense. They do a really good job of getting to the quarterback. They do a great job of creating turnovers. They found a niche now offensively with Hawkins at quarterback to create those explosive plays. And so poise a lot of issues that we have to prepare for. And but like I said, it should be a great day for college football and one that, like I said, we're fortunate to be part of this game.
Okay. All nice stuff. The right things to say. Yep. In terms of X's and O's, it's a weird setup. Oklahoma is kind of like Michigan 2.0. They don't have a quarterback at all. They don't have much offense at all, but they play really, really good defense. And as Steve Sarkisian said, there's the setup. He's trying to be polite about the Oklahoma offense, which has just been awful. I don't know that anyone expects that offense to break out. The better question is, can Oklahoma keep it close enough, long enough to stay in the game? So the questions for this game, Quinn Ewers, is he healthy? Steve Sarkisian didn't say this, but the implication was there. Yeah, Quinn Ewers probably could have played against Mississippi State 2 weeks ago, but Texas was clearly the better team. They're at home. They were fine with Arch Manning. So it was probably the wise thing to do with Quinn Ewers and that team. Now, will he be rusty? Probably so. Is he healthy? Steve Sarkisian hasn't said, but he feels good enough about it for the guy to be the starter. Can the struggling Oklahoma offense, now on their third quarterback, by the way, who's a true freshman, can they stay in this game offensively? Can they hold Texas enough or score with Texas enough to make it a game? Then you got, can the Texas offense start hot? And that is sort of a hallmark of Steve Sarkisian teams and Quinn Ewers. They get off to red hot starts a lot of times. Now he's rusty, but we're going to find out because that's bad news for Oklahoma having to play catch up. Last year or the year before last, when Texas blew out Oklahoma 49-0, I believe Quinn Ewers started the game 12 of 13. And they did it again this year on the road at Michigan. And that's what he's playing for. I wouldn't be shocked to see Texas come out throwing and throwing right away, just trying to light up the scoreboard and make Oklahoma chase them, much like Texas did to Michigan. So that'll be interesting to see how sharp Quinn Ewers really is. Oklahoma, everyone agrees. This isn't rocket science. Oklahoma has to find a way to keep this game close for a while. They cannot let Texas run off and leave them. They cannot let Texas do what Texas did to Michigan in the Cotton Bowls. They just don't have a way to catch up. It's as simple as that. I've been a part of a lot of these games. I could bore you with stories. Well, my father refereed this game, so I was on the sidelines when I was 7, 8, 9. You know, so I grew up on this field in the Cotton Bowl. It's an amazing place. The sound is like none other. When you look up, it's like none other, of course, because the stadium is divided perfectly in half. It's just it's a cool setup. The setup of the rivalry, I think, is what makes it best. Whether the two teams at the time, and historically they've been, you know, top five programs, obviously. But even right now, you've got 1 versus 18. But that doesn't tell the story. It's the way the game is set up, playing in a neutral site, playing by splitting the stadium in half. It's just been cool. There are, I can tell you this, having been a part of it, there are at weird times in this game, and this has happened for many, many years. There are these giant swings that happen in this game. You know, you can go back and look over time at really good games or even in blowouts. All of a sudden, one team gets red hot and just runs off from the other. And it's always happened that way. The reason the line is 14, the line is 14. Like I said, I have no idea when the line in the Texas-Oklahoma has been that big. But the reason why it is 14 points, that's all about the Texas. That's all about the Texas offense, and that's all about the Oklahoma offense. One's good, one's really good, and one is pretty awful. And it's a 14-point spread. I can't remember a line that big. I don't know if Brent Venables tries to use that as motivation. You know, I don't know how much reference you want to make to a 14-point line, but it's there, it's real, and I think a lot of people, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised by the time they kick off if that line moves up. The healthier the stories are about Quinn Ewers and his ability to play, I think more people are going to start betting that line. They're going to bet it up. I wouldn't be shocked if the line by the time they kick off is 15 or 16. I just think there are too many questions about the Oklahoma offense, and especially playing a freshman quarterback. Both coaches, look, I mean, we can talk about pressure on this game. Brent Venables has a new contract. Now, Oklahoma's schedule down the stretch is brutal. So it's a loss against Texas sets up for a pretty rough year. He has a new contract, and so does Steve Sarkisian. This game isn't going to decide either one of them getting fired anytime soon, but it does bring that pressure. And the pressure for Steve Sarkisian is he's 1-2 against Oklahoma. He's 1-2 against Oklahoma, and I believe Texas has been the favorite all three times. That's pressure on Steve Sarkisian. I think Brent Venables could be playing with some house money here. He's in a good spot if his quarterback can play. All right, let's talk about it. There's a lot to break down, a lot of history to this, a lot of short-term meaning, and for this season, a lot of long-term meaning. It's Texas and Oklahoma. We'll talk about the history, the stars, and the impact. It's game day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats, breaking down Texas college football right here on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. It's one of the greatest rivalries in the sport. Some of us might be accused of being slightly biased, but that's okay. Oklahoma and Texas have played each other 119 times. It's Texas with 63 wins, Oklahoma 51. There have been 5 ties. Oddly enough, Oklahoma has won 8 of the last 10. They're both ranked coming into this weekend. So let's talk about it.
Now, so they say, powered by the Low T Center, reinventing men's healthcare.
Kirk Bowles has covered Texas football for 50 years plus. He writes for the Houston Chronicle. Let's do some historical a walk down the old days, if we can. Your time covering Texas-Oklahoma, why it means so much to people in this state?
Well, I think you just hit on it. They're two state universities, and they're the biggest, you know, universities in their state. It's, and you said at the prelude, it's one of the greatest rivalries. I contend, and I try not to be biased, I contend it's the greatest rivalry, and here's the reason. One, it is a neutral site. Two, it's a home game for one half and road game for the other half. There's never a quiet moment in the Cotton Bowl. And then for people that want to say, well, I mean, look at Alabama-Auburn, the Iron Bowl and all its history and legacy. That's not the same because they no longer play at a neutral site as they used to. And does Alabama really respect Auburn? You know, I would say probably not. They are not blue bloods. Texas and OU are blue bloods. They're in the top five winningest all-time programs. And Oklahoma wouldn't survive with just Oklahoma players, so they recruit heavily in Texas. Their starting quarterback for Saturday's from Dallas, which is nothing new. So for all those reasons, I think it's the best rivalry in college sports.
You know, it's funny you say that. I've thought about it a lot. You know, when people always ask, you know how it is this time of year, people not from Texas or Oklahoma always ask, well, why do you guys think it's such a big deal? And I think about the time, one, growing up in this state, then being fortunate enough to play in the game four times. I was on the field, actually, probably another four or five because my father was an official for the game. So,
right.
At any time, maybe it's changed some, but certainly through the history of this, as both the programs have been on these classic runs, you could look on the field, and of the 22 people on the field, 17, 18, maybe more at any time would be from Texas, the biggest and best high school programs in the state of Texas. We all grew up playing in the same state, many times playing against each other.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that gives it so much flavor. You know each other. You've played against each other in high school playoffs. And then, like I said, they're blue bloods. How many blue bloods are there? We probably overuse that term. Were there 10 of them? You know, I mean, you go down the Alabama, Georgia's kind of a late entry, I would argue, because, yeah. You know, they won two titles in the last 3 years. But before that, you go back to 1980. And I just think, and it's in the middle of a state fair, for Pete's sakes. I was on a conference call with Brent Venables, and he confided to me he'd never had a Fletcher's corny dog. And I said, you're missing out. Uh-huh. And he finally, after I chastised him, he said, tell you what, if we win Saturday, I'm going to make sure I get a corny dog. I said, you need to do it anyway. All those things, all those elements come together to make it special. And the fact that, you know, it was the big number one rivalry for each school, even when they weren't in the same conference. And now they're in the same conference for a second time in the SEC. That just adds to the flavor.
Talking to Kirk Bowles with the Houston Chronicle about the history of Texas and Oklahoma. I guess you would have an opinion. Everybody does. You know, the characters and the personalities and the great players that have put their stamp on the game that made it different. But it's funny, for all the great guys, great players I played with, and again, certainly there were plenty against, it's something about Barry Switzer, the character, that made this, did just to me growing up and then playing in the game and then knowing him later and the character that he is, he just added some spice to this rivalry.
No question. And that goes back to my probably all-time favorite Texas OU game. Didn't even have a winner, you know, and you played in one of those ties. But I'm talking about the 6-6 tie in 1976, which was the last Texas OU game for Darrell Royal, who, incidentally, a lot of people don't know, was an All-American quarterback where at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, Gerald Ford was there for the opening coin toss when I was at the Statesman. We broke the spying story that week, and Darrell was quoted in an AP story that, you know, I just don't trust those sorry bastards. So during pregame warm-up, all the OU fans are chanting, sorry, bastard, including the players in pregame warm-up. So how many games do you see that type of atmosphere?
You wouldn't see it today, the way coaches are today. There's really not that many characters. You know, I remember he's a very likable guy. I mean, it's, I think the entire country loves to poke fun at him. But if you're ever around him very much, you kind of learn to appreciate why it is the guys that played for him really like him. He's just a bizarre character, but a likable guy. And I think I tell people, imagine this. So I played in a game. It was 1-2. We were 1 at the time. It was the game that rained, 6 inches or whatever. Oh, yeah. It was the most poorly played, chaotic, wonderful football game I've ever been a part of. I mean, there was nothing but utter chaos throughout, right? And the entire time, he wore a hat, this ugly hat that said "Beat Texas" on it. I mean, imagine a coach today in a social media world wearing a "Beat Texas" or "Beat Oklahoma" hat.
And that's what's wrong with college football today. Yeah. We don't have those characters. I mean,
agreed.
Mike Leach, poor soul, who died a couple years ago, is probably our last guy like that. Just kind of that swashbuckling, colorful, unique caricature of a coach. We need that. The game needs it. I guess the closest would be like Lane Kiffin, to fit in that caricature, I think. But, and Barry was just, he was a people guy. It's like he was so relatable. And, had they not been football coaches, Barry and Darryl probably would have been best friends, because they were the genuine article. Barry sure didn't try to hide it, his character, neither did Darryl.
If you go back in all the years you've covered it, name three players that stand out. I mean, I'm not necessarily the best players for an entire season, but for this particular game.
Well, Stoney Clark had the goal line stand, the nose tackle to keep Oklahoma out of the end zone in overtime, and that was 30 years ago. He would definitely be one of those. And Jordan Shipley is another one, because you remember in 2008, probably the best Texas team.
Yes.
Since 2005, and probably Mack Brown's second best team, even better than the 09 team that lost to Alabama, the national title game. I mean, that was the year they lost the tiebreaker with OU and Texas and Texas Tech all being tied because of the Michael Crabtree game. He had the 96-yard kickoff return in 2008 to beat Oklahoma 45-35. And that was a game OU led like 14-3. After the first quarter. And another game a lot of people don't remember is Steve Hall, a tight end from, I think it was from Broken Arrow. I know he's from Oklahoma. And they always called him Steve Two-Play Hall because he had a touchdown against Oklahoma. And another game, he had the block to spring Earl Campbell for a touchdown. This is a game where playmakers decide the game, and you can become a star and a household name overnight.
You think you're ready for the game, and then every year that I ever played, there's these giant wild swings in the game.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
I have never been in a game and never been around a game that produced these just bizarre runs during the game, most of the time when you least expect it, and oftentimes by guys you would never expect it. I mean, out of the blue, you're looking at a 15, 17-point swing at any time in these games. It's just been historically that way.
And turnovers are always big, but they're so huge in a game like this. And that's what makes it special. Did you ever feel about a game the same as you did during the Oklahoma game, Jeff?
No, nothing even close, no.
And when you kick a tying field goal, too, I mean, your heart had to just be racing before that, right?
Well, you knew me, and my heart never raced. Well, I tell you why it raced, and people don't know this story. So, it's raining 11 inches. We can't find a dry football anywhere. We drive back down the field. Oklahoma had taken a safety, and there is, I want to say, 6 or 7 seconds left in the game. The ball's at, I believe, the Oklahoma 20. So I start walking out thinking, we're just going to kick this and tie. And All of a sudden, I hear, come back. And I looked at the holder, who happened to be our backup quarterback, and I said, what are we doing? Are we running a play? And I walked over, and Fred Akers said, we're running one more. I said, we're running a play. And everybody on the side just froze, and I didn't want to come off the field because I thought, I'm just going to stand here until they make me get off because we need to kick this and go home. Sure enough, he ran a play that ended up in absolute, utter controversy. I've never been run out on the field. Usually people boo you and stuff. Nobody ever wanted to see me, but I've never run out on the field when everybody was fighting. So I go out there and Switzer is tied up in the cord because he's screaming at an official about an interception in the end zone. The players are fighting with each other. Four Oklahoma guys are surrounding the official, and we're lining up to kick the game-tying field goal. And I thought at one time there were 30 people on the field.
And there might have been.
There might have been, exactly. And then...
And that was-
We make the field goal as the clock, you know, ticks down, and all of a sudden I see Barry Switzer run by me, and he is chasing the official up the tunnel, just dropping F-bombs on him the whole way.
That's the most famous interception that wasn't.
Yeah.
Stand there at the back of the end zone.
So yep. Before replay.
Yeah, exactly. Kevin Nelson racing like 60, 70 yards down the Texas sideline and getting stuck at the one, and y'all can't get in. So just drama.
Last thing, who do you lie? I mean, I can't remember a line this big, a 14-point spread. I it may be deserved. It's hard to figure out. Who do you like and why?
Well, I think it is justified, and I think they're going to cover, Jeff. Yeah. I really do. And the two people want to make a point here. One, Sarkisian. He's 1-2 against OU at Texas. You don't want to start your career 1-3 against Oklahoma. That's not good for survival. And the second thing is Quinn Ewers is itching to get back, you know, on the field and make people forget Arch Manning for at least, you know, 3 hours, you know, so he can reclaim his team and show NFL scouts he's durable enough. So I think he wants to put on a show. So I think that the betting line is justified. And I think with Michael Hawkins, a true freshman quarterback for OU, I just don't think they have enough playmakers on the OU side. So I do look for a Texas blowout.
Yeah, especially if they jump out early. That Oklahoma offense is not built to play catch up at all. No, yeah,
it's not.
Yeah. Kirk, great talking to you. We could probably do this for hours telling stories and sound like old guys, right? Enjoy the game. Good talking to you as always. I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. Game Day with Jeff Ward, where Texas college football goes under the lights. On News Radio 1080 KRLD.
It's Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward. I mentioned a few times last week, this past Saturday was Separation Saturday for a lot of teams in the state of Texas. It was just the pressure was on. It was time to make a statement, do something, get some positive momentum. I said that mostly about Texas A&M, and they did it just right. It could not have gone any better. Everything A&M needed to do, they did it at home. Andrew Monaco is a longtime voice of the Aggies. All right, Andrew, put in perspective. You don't have to mention Missouri or not. Beating a ninth-ranked team at home that way is the biggest win for an A&M program in how long?
We're taking out 7 overtimes, and we're taking out number one. Maybe, would you say, well, let's see. They beat number 5 LSU to end the season a couple of seasons ago, but 9 Alabama, Jeff?
I think if you asked a lot of people, I think that's the first thing that would come to mind. And arguably, what happened on Saturday in the beatdown of Missouri was even more complete than any performance I've seen.
Yeah, it was definitely their most complete game of the season. Alabama, there was so much intrigue and all of that. Zach Calzada taking the lead, the response of Devon Achane's kickoff return, but Alabama had the lead. No, this was their most complete game of the season. It's nice to see this team getting better each week. And according to Mike Elko, they're not playing their best. Still, obviously, a work in progress, but I think it's one of those games where you really buy in, right? I think Florida was a buy-in game, Arlington a buy-in game over Arkansas. This is one where the players really gain some confidence, I believe.
The decision to go with Connor Wiegman. Explain.
Connor had shoulder pain. That was the AC joint. Once the pain went away, Jeff, then it becomes time. Okay, when it goes away, he comes back. He had practiced all week. There was a little soreness earlier in the week. That soreness went away. Great practice on Thursday for him. Here's what else goes into it. His matchup as for lack of a better phrase, throwing into windows, he matched up better against this Missouri defense. That's one, a little better than Marcel Reed. Two, he's the number one, Jeff, and it's time to go back to number one when he's healthy. And Mike Elko has asked us, well, you could have given him another week, right, and then do it against Mississippi State. Mike had to see how he was going to play in a game. But He's the number one. He didn't just win that job this year. He won it last year also. A lot of people forget before he got injured. So the pain was gone. That was step one. They were never going to play him if the pain was there. The soreness from not being able to throw all the time. But let me also give Marcel Reed credit because he prepared as if he were going to start. And I think it says an awful lot about that young man as well.
But it's Connor Wigman's ball if he stays healthy the rest of the way.
Yep, he's the number one. Marcel is two. You know, we get so caught up on numbers, right? You're one play away, Jeff.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's at every position. I think that's what fans need to understand. Like Mike said, we changed our starting wide receiver because Jabri Barber was healthier, or Jahdae Walker would be out because of a dislocated finger. On the back end, Dez Ricks is starting at one of the corners when it was Javon Thomas. Bryce Anderson not starting at safety because he's injured but playing third down. It's what competition at each position really gives you. Quarterback is no different, but neither are those other positions. So I think it's that combination. Connor obviously won the job. He's the number one, but we have to do it every week. That's why I think I like what Mike Elko's instilled over practice. The best 11 are going to start on each side of the ball.
Probably said this to you at some point this season, and I think it's worth repeating again. You know they're really good on defense. I mean, the body of work is there consistently. That defense will keep them in every game, and I think Mike Elko knows that. But they go, is it fair to say, they go, that team goes as Connor Wigman goes?
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I'm going to add another position group. I think that offensive line, I think – because Connor is trust the right word, Jeff. Like he was thrown out of the pocket in times, and you know your rhythm is off in the past. This offensive line, I think there's trust on a lot of sides here. But yeah, I would agree with that. And by getting more comfortable together on that offense, on those days where the defense is surrendering more than 10 or 20 points. When the offense is clicking, can they, you know what I mean when I say bail out the defense? You're going to have that because I think it's that confidence that he plays with, the leadership that he has, and it's not discounting how Le'Veon Moss is running and that offensive line giving time. I think you're seeing it become a little more cohesive as we go week to week.
Talking to Andrew Monaco, the voice of the Aggies. That program needed a good outing. It needed a good offensive outing. It just needed the positive vibes, and they got all of that. So here we go. This is a program that has shown flashes of brilliance at various times for several years. Forget the coach. They've shown it a few times only to then digress. I mean, I'm sure Aggie fans are like, wow, that was impressive. 41 points on a 9-ranked team in the country. But I'll bet you all of them are still saying, yeah, but.
Keep showing me, right? Keep proving it. And that's what I think Mississippi State is, Jeff. We'll take it in increments, right? Mississippi State is okay. You're gonna fall into everybody patting you on the back and telling you you just beat number nine, or you're gonna do what you still did over the course of the week. How did you prepare for that win? That will be a test. Very similar. We just talked about number one, the win over number one Alabama. They went in the next week to Columbia and a true road win, which was the last before Florida. They did a job on Missouri. That was not a close game. And that, I thought, was a good sign for them. So that's what Mississippi State will be. How are you going to prepare? How are you going to play? And then another matchup comes up, Jeff. Then it's LSU. you're gonna get it right again. It was one of the marquee games at home. So you're going to get that same test again before you even get to those games, as we were talking about November, of South Carolina. Obviously, later on, it is Texas and having to go to Auburn for those games. Yeah, I think what Mike has instilled is, look, we're not there yet. We can get better, with the message being to his team, you still have work to do. Yeah, you're good. Don't discount that. You never give wins back. But we've got to keep on building. But yeah, that's in the back of everybody's mind, Jeff. I don't disagree with you whatsoever. Keep showing us. Keep showing us. And all you can do, I'll put the old cliche, is just keep winning every snap or as many snaps as you can against that next opponent. Mike will not let this team look towards the 12-team playoff. That is not going to happen. And I think once that's instilled, and I think he has instilled that, that's going to be the mantra that this team will play to.
Well, you stole my thunder there, because they're already listed as, you know, now we have bubble teams, which is the first time that's ever happened. It's a weird thing to say. The conversation, whether they, you know, can put their hands over their ears and not hear it, I don't know. But the conversation for all of us is going to be, huh, boy, these games in late October, November are now deciding if you're in a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, yeah. And Jeff, let's be honest. We're talking not just the 18 to 22s who are playing. We're talking about a fan base also that is looking at that also.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Can you – I don't think you can ever ignore it, Jeff. I think that's naive to say that. But is it the driving reason? Like, I think it's a reason why Mike says that strain and the effort. Looking at that poll, looking at the bubble, looking at the number next to your name, right, where you are ranked, that doesn't take strain and effort. Winning 41-10 takes the strain and the effort. And I think that needs to be the focus. Look, I'm also one to tell you, you embrace now. The expectations change. Mississippi State playing Texas A&M in two Saturdays, and I know they have a game in between. That becomes a game for Mississippi State to make a statement of their own in a season that is getting away from them. Your expectations change over the course, but what doesn't change is how you prepare. But it's naive to say it's not out there, but can you keep that focus? And that's what Mike talks about. Can you keep the focus not just on your preparation, as he talks about, in four quarters of the game? Can you play a more complete game, not get into the ruts on offense where there's a three and out, putting more pressure on your defense? Can you keep that focus on what's the most important? If you do that, that number next to your name at the end of the season will be one through 12, and that's one of the numbers that you need. If you don't do that and take your eyes off and put it on the wrong thing, then you're not going to be one of those teams, and you fall into that cycle of disappointment.
Well said, Andrew. Great stuff. Good talking to you as always, man.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
You bet. All right, let's talk about who's under pressure. I would be welcome back Quinn Ewers and Steve Sarkisian. I'll pick some games, too. I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. So, what coaches, players, or teams are under the most pressure this weekend? There's a lot to spread around, so let's do it.
Now, Under Pressure, powered by Sampec, five-star Ford, North Richland Hills.
The Under Pressure list. First up, surprisingly, I think, Texas coach Steve Sarkisian. He's got the number one team in the country, and he's favored by 14 over his program's biggest rival. So you're going to say, wait a minute, so how could there be so much pressure? The answer is he's under pressure because he has the number one team in the country and because his team is favored by 14. And most importantly, he's 1-2 against Oklahoma while at Texas. That's where the pressure comes from. He's expected to win and expected to win big. Oklahoma has won 8 of the last 10, including last year when Texas was favored. Last year's game, I got to believe, haunts Steve Sarkisian. His team blew a 4th-and-1 and likely would have won the game had they converted. Then they gave up an easy touchdown in the final seconds to just completely melt down in the last minute and a half of last year's game. That can't happen again. Cannot. This is a game he and Texas have to win, not just because they're number one, not just because they're chasing a college football playoff and maybe a conference championship at the SEC. It's because he's 1-2 against Oklahoma. It matters to Texas fans. Under pressure, Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers. Few storylines with Quinn Ewers that you can't help but think about. He's under pressure, one, because he hasn't played in a month. And during that time, you know this, the entire country has had Manning mania. Arch Manning has owned the football news cycle. He really has. Every clip, every soundbite, every talk show has spent the past month pointing out how great Arch Manning has been in a relief role. There's no way you can't hear it if you're Quinn Ewers. He does a masterful job of staying in his lane and staying focused. But, you know, Arch Manning mania has been there. And Arch Manning has played well enough to prove he can handle the job. So, you know, it's I'm not saying it's a short leash for Quinn Ewers, but the bullpen looks pretty good for Texas. Looks really good for Texas. Quinn Ewers has historically been a really, really fast starter, particularly in this game. He started one game against Oklahoma, 12 of 13, or maybe even 13 of 14. He was just, it was absolutely on fire. In fact, the one incompletion was a drop. But if he were to get off to a slow start, you know exactly where that camera is going. You know exactly what the fans are starting to grumble about. If he got off to a slow start, that camera would go right on Arch Manning in a heartbeat, and the crowd would grumble. I think Steve Sarkisian, Arch Manning, and Quinn Ewers have handled that whole superstar, celebrity thing really, really well. But, yeah, that's where the camera's going to go if Quinn Ewers starts slowly, which he rarely does. Then he also faces, with Quinn Ewers, every big-time college player is thinking about the NFL. It's just a fact. He faces the pressure of fighting off that label of being injury-prone, which is true, and it is fair. He has not been able to stay healthy. He's been injured and missed games every season he's been at Texas, and it's hanging out there, and it's talked a lot about. You know, you can say, you can come up with the reasons why, but the fact is the guy is injured pretty often. It has to bother NFL teams. So there's extra pressure on Quinn Ewers, not just to play well against Oklahoma, not just to shake off the rust, but for Quinn Ewers to play well and stay healthy the entire rest of the season. He's got to be thinking, my draft status depends on staying healthy. In fact, these were just this past week, interesting comments by ESPN draft analysts Mel Kiper about Quinn Ewers.
Quinn Ewers, Michelle, I think that's the thing. I know the Arch Manning situation there. He did great against those teams that they played, the weaker opponents. But Quinn Ewers, this is his team coming back from the injury. How does he perform? Kelvin Banks Jr. at left tackle is the most highest rated player in this football game. One heck of a player, left tackle out of Texas. But Quinn Ewers, everybody says, well, Heisman, he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. Getting back to where he's making those accurate strikes and the decision-making and staying away from things that are, you know, effectively, you know, the momentum of the game. Well, he's got talent around them. There's no question. They had to basically go back this year and say, okay, we lost some good receivers, some great receivers, Worthy, right? And all the other guys that they lost, right? But they were able to make up for it through the portal. Well, how does this continue moving forward now that he's back in that line? Quinn Ewers now, still a mid-first rounder, in my opinion. How does he do now once he's healthy and he rolls through the rest of the season?
There you go. Interesting. Yeah, there's the pressure. Also, add to the list, under pressure. I'm going to say Oklahoma head coach Brent Venables. Not for the obvious reason of, oh, you lose this big game, you lose to your rival, you get fired. That's not on the table right now. The guy has a brand new contract. He doesn't have to win the game against Texas. He pulled off an upset a year ago. So that's not the concern. Here it is for Brent Venables. And this, and you really know this entire game in the first 20 to 25 minutes. He does need to keep this game close. He needs to keep this game close for a variety of reasons. I'll explain. He had this to say about Texas this past week.
Yeah, I don't know about chess match. It's a player's game, and they're not really concerned about what you're doing. They're going to do what they do, and they do it well. They're going to run the football. They're going to set it up, play actions. They're going to take a lot of shots and create explosives, very vertically challenging offense. And, you know, the quarterbacks, it's driven by those quarterbacks. They play incredibly accurately. You know, they're a veteran within the system, in Quinn Ewers. I don't really look at it. I think, Steve's, you know, an excellent, offensive minded coach, knows what he's doing. His presentations are fantastic. Puts his players in position to be successful. He knows how to create leverage, and he knows how to attack a defensive structure. So when you have that along with really good, experienced, explosive, talented players, it's a recipe for success. And he's headed at the highest level, and they're playing that way right now.
Yeah, here's why I say pressure's on Brent Venables. It's to keep it close, and it's not because of just this game. It's the rest of Oklahoma's schedule. It's brutal. You feel as if Texas were to blow out Oklahoma, things could spiral. Here's why. This is what Oklahoma has left on their schedule. Texas, Ole Miss on the road, Missouri on the road, desperate Missouri team, Alabama, and they finished the year at LSU. Five losses in seven games is not out of the question for Oklahoma. Blowout loss to Texas, and now you understand why I say it could start them spiraling.
Now, by the numbers, powered by Classic Chevrolet.
All right, last thing, let's pick a few games. Wait, there's only two. Yeah, that's because of our top five. A&M, SMU, and Texas Tech are all off this weekend. So we pick against the spread. I like to tell you, there's only wagering among family members. I think I was 4-1 last week. And the one loss was, on my part, a complete swing and miss. I had Missouri to keep it close at Kyle Field. That went well. They were blown out by the Aggies, so I lost that one. Two games, you've got Texas State playing. They're in our top five, the number five, and then Texas and Oklahoma, of course. So let's start with Texas State. They're favored by 14 in San Marcos over Arkansas State. When Texas State gets hot, they blow people out. The two losses they've had are really close, disappointing losses that kind of haunt them. But when they're on, they're tough to beat. I think this is an easy game for them in San Marcos. I take them to cover the 14 against Arkansas State. In the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, Texas is favored by, for now, 14 points over Oklahoma. It feels crazy to even say that line about one of the biggest games in the college game every year. You know, another interesting number is the over-under total on this game. That's the total points. The projection is for the total points scored. It's 50.5. And Oklahoma wants no part of a high-scoring game. They haven't proven they can score. They're sketchy at best on offense. They start a true freshman quarterback. So at 14 points as of right now, I'm going to take Texas to cover. I don't know how you can trust the Oklahoma offense to hang around long enough. It'll have to be their defense keeping them in it. So I'll take Texas to cover the 14. And the bad news for Oklahoma is I think Texas might hit the over. If yours is hot, look out. It's bad news. So you'll know, I can tell you this much, at the Cotton Bowl, you'll know how this game is going to play out, and you'll know it pretty quickly because a hot start by Texas, and it's probably lights out for Oklahoma. All right, that's it for game day. I'm Jeff Ward. We'll do it again next week.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.